Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. It's now.
Imagine a surgeon in Poland, right? Operating on a critically ill patient.
High stakes, obviously.
Exactly. The procedure requires the strictly maintained sterile environment. But suddenly, the air ventilation in the surgical theater just completely shuts down.
Wow.
Yeah, and the humidity spikes. No alarm sound. The local hospital maintenance staff, they didn't touch the controls, and no equipment actually malfunctioned.
Because a hacker thousands of miles away did it.
Right. All because of a diplomatic conversation happening in a totally different country that same morning. So, welcome to this deep dive.
It's a crazy scenario.
It really is. Today, our mission is to unpack a breaking intelligence report from April 2026. It's titled The Profile of Cyber Offensive Activity Impacting Europe.
And the scale of what we are looking at in this profile is really difficult to overstate.
Yeah.
This report was compiled by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau, which is a division of the Orange Cyber Defense Epidemiology Laboratory.
So these are heavy hitters.
Absolutely. They didn't just guess what these threat actors were doing. They used correlated, validated open source intelligence. So OSINT combined with human intelligence.
And they gathered this directly from the Telegram channels used by these groups, right? Like throughout all of April 2026.
Yeah, exactly. We are effectively reading their internal operational diaries.
Which means we are getting a front row seat to their raw communications. But before we dig into the mechanisms of these attacks, we really need to establish some ground rules for you as you listen today.
Yes, very important.
Because these threat actors, they are highly ideologically driven. Their communications are just filled with sweeping political claims, aggressive accusations, clear geopolitical agendas.
Right. And we are analyzing this data strictly from a cyber perspective. I mean, we aren't taking sides. We aren't making moral judgments. And we are absolutely not validating the political claims or the language used by these groups.
No, not at all.
The goal here is purely analytical. We're looking objectively at the data, the specific tactics they deploy, and the inferences we can make about the cyber landscape during, you know, a period of intense geopolitical tension.
Yeah, we're basically looking at the digital shadows cast by physical world events. We're here to take apart the engine and see how it runs, not to endorse where the car is driving.
That's a great way to put it.
But let's start with that engine then, because the speed of the reaction time in this April 2026 data is what immediately caught my eye.
It's incredibly fast now.
Right. In the past, cyber espionage was this slow burn. Hackers would lurk in a system for months. Now, the feedback loop between a physical political event and a digital attack is just instantaneous.
Yeah, the time frame has collapsed from months to mere hours. These cyber activities are deeply intertwined with physical geopolitical moves. They function as contextual trigger points.
Give us an example of that.
So a prime example in the data revolves around South Korea. In early April 2026, South Korean diplomatic circles began discussing the possibility of joining NATO's prioritized Ukraine requirements list.
Commonly referred to as PURL, right?
Yes, PURL.
And just to be clear, they were only discussing the possibility of supplying non-lethal aid to Kyiv, like no weapons, no final decisions, just diplomatic whispers.
Right. But the moment those discussions leaked into the press, it triggered a coordinated wave of cyber attacks on South Korean infrastructure.
Instantly.
And the groups claiming responsibility didn't even hide their motives. They explicitly cited the NATO PURL discussions in their Telegram channels.
Wow. And what did they hit?
They hit the South Korean government portal, the Ministry of Interior Affairs, the Ministry of Education, and critical public data portals.
See, the mechanism of that retaliation is what fascinates me. How does a politician speaking at a podium in Seoul instantly result in a server crashing across the world?
Well, it happens because these threat actors have prepositioned assets.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they aren't starting from scratch every time a politician speaks. They constantly scan global infrastructure for vulnerabilities. They maintain a catalog of weak entry points.
Like a menu.
Exactly like a menu. When a geopolitical trigger occurs, like the South Korea-NATO discussion, they simply consult their catalog, find the relevant targets they've already mapped out, and execute the attack sequence.
Okay, that makes the UK data make a lot more sense, because the UK announced actual weapons shipments to Ukraine, right? Drones, artillery shells, millions of rounds of ammunition.
Yes, they did.
And the digital retaliation wasn't random. It was this highly specific barrage aimed at British municipalities and businesses.
Right. They targeted the Leicestershire County Council, the Blackburn City Portal, and even local water supply companies like Wessex Water.
Just going right after civilian infrastructure.
Yeah. And we see this exact dynamic mirrored in the Middle East. So during the Passover holidays, intersecting with the ongoing Gaza conflict, a group called Handala Hack tied their operations directly to the geopolitical calendar.
They went after Israeli air defense command and control systems, didn't they?
They did. They threatened unprecedented breaches targeting the core of those systems. They also targeted the Yad Vashem Holocaust Museum.
Jeez.
Yeah, they subsequently claimed to have compromised the personal information of visitors and donors. The timing of these digital strikes is meticulously calibrated to maximize friction during physical holidays and geopolitical flashpoints.
I need to push back here, though. I mean, defacing a museum website or taking down a city council portal, it's a nuisance. It creates headlines. But does it actually change foreign policy?
That's the big question.
Like, is it accurate to view these cyber actors as an unofficial, immediate digital foreign policy arm for these conflicts? Or are they just digital vandals looking for attention?
Well, the analysts at the Cyber Intelligence Bureau infer that they function as highly agile proxy forces.
Proxy forces, okay.
Yeah. While a defaced website might seem like vandalism, the cumulative effect of hundreds of these targeted disruptions forces a nation to divert massive resources towards cyber defense.
Oh, the distraction factor.
Exactly. Traditional military assets take days or weeks to deploy. These groups can project power across borders instantly. And what allows them to operate with such staggering speed and scale brings us to a major shift highlighted in the report.
The corporatization stuff.
Yes, corporate-style consolidation.
Yeah, the section of the report detailing their internal structure reads like, I don't know, a slew of press releases from Silicon Valley tech startups.
It really does.
They're announcing mergers, partnerships, and joint ventures to pool resources. It's bizarre.
But it's a highly structured evolution. They recognize that isolated individuals operating out of basements, they just cannot sustain long-term campaigns against nation states.
Right. They need scale.
So they're forming complex operational alliances to achieve those economies of scale. The prime example from the April 2026 data is the formation of the Z-Pentest Alliance.
That's a merger of three distinct groups, correct?
Yes, three highly capable entities. You have Noname 05716, a group called Shadowclaw Z404, who operate under the motto Silent, Sharp, Unseen, and the Morningstar Group.
Quite the lineup.
By merging, they don't just share targets. They combine their proprietary malware, their human capital, and their botnets.
Let's define botnet for a second, because we hear that term thrown around a lot.
Sure. A botnet is essentially a zombie army of infected computers. Hackers slip malicious software onto thousands, sometimes millions, of everyday devices.
Like laptops and smart TVs.
Even connected refrigerators.
Mm.
And the owners of these devices have absolutely no idea they're infected.
That's unsettling.
Right. The hacker can then send a single command to wake up this entire zombie army and direct them all to attack a single target simultaneously.
So when these three groups merged into the Z-Pentest Alliance, they basically combined their individual zombie armies into one massive, overwhelming force.
It's like a corporate merger creating a monopoly.
And following that corporate playbook, they also rebrand when their public image becomes a liability, right?
Oh, absolutely. The group formerly known as the Russian Legion is a textbook example of this.
What happened with them?
They realized their very public, noisy hacktivist identity was drawing way too much heat from international law enforcement.
Makes sense.
So they announced on Telegram that they were killing the Russian Legion identity. They rebranded as Squad 13, claiming a transition into a stealthy, targeted digital retribution unit operating as 13 untraceable nodes.
And as the old players merge and rebrand, new players are launching. I saw the report flags a group called Unit 21.
Unit 21 is a really formidable emerging threat. According to their own communications, they sat entirely dormant in darknet forums since 2023.
Just waiting.
Just waiting. They spent years simply building custom exploitation frameworks, yeah, waiting for the right moment to launch operations. Then you have groups like Chemus Plus, who also operate under the name AlexSec.
And what's their angle?
They specialize almost exclusively in massive database breaches and data brokering. It's a rapidly diversifying ecosystem with specialized roles.
Okay, so we have these organized corporate-style alliances acting as digital proxy forces. That brings us to the actual targets. And this is where the report gets genuinely chilling for me.
It's very concerning.
Because we aren't talking about them trying to hack military mainframes. They are going after industrial control systems, or ICS, and SCADA systems.
Yes.
For the listeners, what exactly is a SCADA system, and why is it so terrifying that they are targeting them?
Well, SCADA stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition.
Yeah.
Think of SCADA as the bridge between the digital world of computer code and the physical world of heavy machinery.
Okay, a bridge.
Right. If you want a computer to tell a massive industrial water pump to turn on, or a factory robotic arm to swing left, you use a SCADA system.
So if you hack the SCADA system, you aren't just stealing data. You are physically moving objects in the real world.
You are taking physical control of civilian life. The barrier between a digital hack and a physical consequence just evaporates. Look at the operations claimed by the Z-Pentest Alliance. They compromised the GeoEco BMS system in a Polish hospital. BMS stands for Building Management System.
That's the scenario we talked about at the top of the show. How does a hacker in another country get into a hospital's physical ventilation?
Well, many of these building management systems were installed years ago to allow local maintenance staff to adjust the temperature remotely via the internet.
Convenience.
Exactly. They prioritize convenience over security. Often they run on outdated software and use default passwords.
Just basic admin passwords?
Yes. The Z-Pentest Alliance scanned the internet, found the hospital's open portal, and logged in. They gained unauthorized access to the ventilation, temperature, and humidity controls.
In a hospital.
They had control over the surgical units, the laryngology department, the recovery rooms, and crucially, the sterile zones.
So they could literally alter the physical environment of a patient mid-surgery.
And the report notes the system had no visible means for the medical personnel in the room to detect this unauthorized control.
That is terrifying.
The screen in the maintenance room might show everything is perfectly normal while the hacker is actively altering the air exchange rates.
And they deployed the same tactic against the food supply, too. The report mentions the Albert Most Velebutic hypermarket in the Czech Republic.
Exactly the same mechanism. They infiltrated the climate control systems. They had access to the boiler room, the industrial chillers, the cold storage rooms, and the server room.
So they could just spoil all the food.
They explicitly stated their capability to disable the cooling systems entirely, which would destroy thousands of tons of food and cause millions in economic damage.
I also saw the MS Tech Purewater 100 system mentioned in the report regarding South Korea. How does someone sitting at a keyboard manipulate the pH balance of a country's drinking water?
Well, the MS Tech Purewater 100 manages water treatment plants. By compromising the digital interface, the attackers claim they could monitor and alter the conductivity, pH levels, and flow rates.
Just from a laptop.
With a single click, they could stop pumps, overheat industrial compressors, and disrupt the thermal balance of the entire facility.
But I keep coming back to the target selection. I mean, I understand hitting a water plant if you want to cause chaos. But the report highlights a massive campaign against CCTV video surveillance systems.
Yes, very widespread.
They infiltrated IP cameras at Polish compressor stations, British pharmacies, and even a 16-camera setup at a convenience store in the UK.
Right.
They specifically highlighted gaining full access to the internal network of Pierce's Farm Shop and Cafe in the UK. Over 32 cameras.
They could observe the cash registers, the kitchen, the warehouse, and literally every customer walking through the door.
But I have to challenge the strategy. A farm shop. How is hacking the security cameras at a local family cafe an act of international cyber warfare?
It seems petty, right?
It feels like they're just hitting whatever is vulnerable so they can brag about it on Telegram.
Well, the vulnerability is certainly part of the appeal. But the Cyber Intelligence Bureau analysts infer a much deeper psychological motive here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is about modern asymmetric warfare. The strategic value isn't in degrading a military target. It's in societal disruption.
Make everyone feel unsafe.
Exactly. By proving they can touch the most mundane, intimate aspects of daily civilian life, your hospital, your supermarket, the local farm shop where you buy your vegetables, they erode public trust.
Because if your government can't keep a foreign hacker out of the local cafe's security cameras, how can you trust them to protect the electrical grid?
Precisely.
That makes the how of these attacks even more critical, because the methods range from hyper-advanced to just shockingly simple. Let's talk about Nonimoma 5766 and their DDoja project.
Yes.
This completely blew my mind. They've essentially turned cyber warfare into a gig economy job for volunteers.
The DDoja project is a masterclass in crowdsourcing a cyber conflict. To understand it, we should probably quickly clarify what a DDoS attack is.
Yeah, go for it.
DDoS stands for Distributed Denial of Service. Imagine a highway leading to a city. A DDoS attack is like sending 10,000 fake cars onto that highway all at once.
So a massive traffic jam.
Right. The road gets so jammed that the real traffic, the legitimate users, cannot get through. The city servers eventually collapse under the weight of the fake traffic.
Okay, so how does the DDoSia project crowdsource those fake cars?
Nonay 057-1616 runs a massive Telegram channel where they post daily targets. And anyone, anywhere in the world, can volunteer.
Anyone?
Anyone. You download their proprietary client software onto your computer. When they announce a target, your computer automatically lends its processing power and internet bandwidth to generate those fake cars.
And they get paid for this.
Yeah. In return, the volunteers receive cryptocurrency rewards based on how much traffic they generate.
You download an app, lend your computer's power to attack a foreign government, and get paid in crypto.
It's wild.
Anyone with an internet connection becomes a node in a state-aligned weapon.
It drastically lowers the barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
But the report also contrasts that low-barrier crowdsourcing with highly sophisticated tools.
Right, like Unit 21.
It's exactly. On the advanced end of the spectrum, Unit 21 claims to utilize a self-developed multi-vector exploitation framework called Baron. According to their communications, Baron is designed specifically to hunt and weaponize zero-day vulnerabilities.
Zero-day vulnerabilities are the holy grail for hackers, right?
They are. Think of a zero-day as a hidden, secret backdoor into a bank vault that even the architect who built the bank doesn't know exists.
Because the software developer doesn't know the flaw is there, they haven't written a security patch for it.
Right. There is no lock on the door because no one knows it needs a lock. Weaponizing a zero-day requires immense technical skill and resources.
And yet, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, the low-tech attacks are almost embarrassing for the defenders.
Oh, absolutely.
The Z-Pentest Alliance compromised the CCTV system of a municipal wastewater treatment plant in South Korea. They gained full access to cameras monitoring water quality analyzers and pumping stations.
And the attackers explicitly noted in their Telegram posts that the security on this critical infrastructure system was comparable to a typical home router.
A home router, protecting a city's wastewater.
We're talking about weak network segmentation, outdated protocols, and a total lack of basic multi-factor authentication.
It's mind-boggling.
The advanced frameworks like Baron are lethal, yes. But a staggering percentage of these successful attacks happen simply because critical civilian infrastructure is left functionally unguarded.
If we pull back and look at the broader picture, the analysts offer some fascinating psychological profiling.
Yes, the inferences they draw are very interesting.
And these are inferences based on the data, right? Not mind reading. But they suggest the hack itself is often just the delivery mechanism. The actual payload is the psychological impact on the public.
The primary motivation often appears to be psychological warfare over physical destruction.
Yeah.
There is a direct quote from Unit 21 in the source data that perfectly encapsulates this. Prior to launching an attack on UK infrastructure, they posted, and I quote, "Fear is better than death. Fear makes you question your leaders."
Fear is better than death.
The analytical hypothesis here is that the goal is to paralyze societies. They want to drive a wedge between the citizen and the state. And they are using information warfare and blackmail to hammer that wedge deeper.
You mentioned the Russian Legion rebranding to Squad 13 earlier. Their first major operation under the new brand wasn't a physical hack at all, was it? It was pure political blackmail.
Information warfare as a direct tool for deterrence. Squad 13 claimed to have accessed personal emails between Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they published alleged excerpts discussing private events and meetings.
And keeping our neutrality rule in mind, the intelligence report doesn't validate whether those documents are authentic or completely fabricated, right?
Exactly. The veracity of the documents is almost secondary to their tactical deployment. Squad 13 weaponized this data leak.
How so?
They threatened to release the full archive specifically to influence public perception and to deter U.S. foreign policy regarding Iran.
They explicitly linked it to Iran.
They stated in their channel, "You threaten Iran while your own hands are soaked. One warning to the U.S., stay out of our way."
Wow.
Or we release the Epstein transcripts page by page.
They are attempting to hold a nation's foreign policy hostage using compromised or fabricated data.
Yeah.
But the report also notes that underneath all the grand geopolitical strategy and ideological posturing, a lot of this is driven by pure profit.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a massive blurring of ideology and financial gain.
It is a recurring pattern in cyber threat intelligence. Groups will wave a political flag with one hand while holding out a collection plate with the other.
All right.
A striking example from April 2026 involves a group called NullSec Philippines. They conducted a massive defacement campaign against Brazilian government websites, replacing the official homepages with the hashtag #StopWar.
On the surface, that looks like a classic, ideologically driven hacktivist campaign.
But if you look at their Telegram channel on those exact same days, NullSec Philippines was actively advertising the sale of advanced DDoS scripts, custom malware, and compromised web shells to the highest bidder.
Okay, let's quickly explain what a web shell is for the listener.
Sure. Imagine a burglar breaks into a house through a window. Before they leave, they unlock the back door and hide the key under the mat so they can easily come back later.
Right.
A web shell is the digital equivalent. It's a malicious script a hacker leaves behind on a compromised server, giving them a hidden, permanent back door into the system.
And NullSec Philippines was selling these back doors.
Yes. So the analyst asks the question, are they genuine hacktivists fighting for global peace, or are they cyber arms dealers using a trending geopolitical slogan as marketing for their tool sets?
That's a great question.
The inference is that financial motivation heavily underpins even the most fervent ideological campaigns.
We've covered an immense amount of ground, and the sheer volume of activity in just a single month, April 2026, is overwhelming.
It's a lot to take in.
We've gone from hospital ventilation systems in Poland to crowdsourcing attacks on British farm shops to political blackmail and the sale of digital backdoors.
Right. Synthesizing this intelligence profile reveals a cyber landscape that has rapidly matured into a highly coordinated ecosystem.
Everything is connected.
Civilian infrastructure is no longer accidental collateral damage.
Mm.
It's being routinely, intentionally, and systematically weaponized to achieve geopolitical leverage.
It's intentional.
Very. The barrier to entry has plummeted thanks to volunteer networks and gig economy models, while the potential for catastrophic physical disruption has skyrocketed. Because our industrial control systems, our SCADA networks, remain highly vulnerable.
The distinction between cyberspace and physical reality has completely evaporated. Think about the systems in your own life as you listen to this. Your local grocery store, the pharmacy down the street, the water treatment plant in your town.
We rely on them blindly.
We assume those systems are just there to keep the food cold and the water clean. But this data shows they are actively contested zones in global conflicts.
The digital shadows of those geopolitical conflicts are falling directly across the infrastructure that sustains our daily lives.
Which leaves us with a final, somewhat unsettling thought for you to mull over. If civilian systems like a hypermarket's climate control, a hospital's sterile ventilation, or family farm shop security cameras are now the primary frontline targets in international geopolitical conflicts.
Yeah.
How does that redefine the concept of a non-combatant in the digital age? Are we all, simply by interacting with connected infrastructure, sitting on the digital front lines?
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.